Breadbox Media Programming is brought to you by...
Do you wish you knew the saints better? Overwhelmed with all the events in Catholic history and just wish you could tie it all together? It's tough work, and even scientists have determined that it takes approximately 400 repetitions to create a new synapse in the brain. Unless it is done with play, in which case it takes between 10 and 20 repetitions. Introducing Saint Cards, where the facts about saints and history are presented in fun and engaging games for ages 4 to 104. Check out Saint Cards at saintcards.com and begin the fun for your family, school, and parish today.
Introducing the redesigned CatholicSingles.com, featuring new ways that put the spotlight on the person and their faith, not just a profile picture. For the past 20 years, faithful Catholics have used CatholicSingles.com, and the reimagined CatholicSingles.com website is ready to help single Catholics take the next step in sharing meaningful relationships with other faithful Catholics. Remember, CatholicSingles.com for faith, fellowship, and love.
What are you doing this Lent? The St. Paul Center is streaming their newest video Bible study for free starting Ash Wednesday. Based on Scott Hahn's renowned covenantal theology, this is a study no one should miss. Invite your friends, Catholic or not. Don't miss your chance to see this premium study for free. Go to stpaulcenter.com to sign up today.
Welcome to Live a Little, episode 6. Today we are going to talk about something not very pleasant, but unfortunately is a reality of our life. Most of us, I think probably every one of us, have met someone who has been through divorce, or we had to somehow deal with it. And for the married ones, we kind of don't know sometimes to talk about this. We want to avoid these awkward situations, but it comes up. And I thought we could talk to someone who not only who has been through divorce, but also who is working with people who is going through this awful situation. I think this episode is going to be good for single people so they can go into marriage with their eyes open and they truly know the person they're getting married and what the Lord and the church expects from us. The married can hear and learn from my guests' insights so that the same mistakes won't be made, or they can also learn how to help friends whose marriages are on rocky waters. And if anybody who's struggling, maybe they can also hear and stay in the church, even if their marriage is annulled, that they will come back to Christ. So I'm hoping my conversation with Vicky Soule, who works for the Diocese of Lincoln, will be an encouragement for all of us when we talk about divorce. Kisol is a convert. She will tell her story here in a little bit. But unfortunately, even after her conversion, her marriage came to an end and she had a civil divorce and she got her marriage annulled. After having dealt with the emotional waters of divorce, she became a facilitator for a program called Surviving Divorce, Hope and Healing for the Catholic Family, that is run by the Diocese of Lincoln's Family Life Office. Come to Little, Vicky. Thanks for coming on the show.
Thanks for having me.
Oh, it's going to be wonderful, I think. I think it's going to be very helpful. So, Vicky, tell us a little bit about yourself.
I suppose I should start with that I'm a convert. So I did not grow up as a Catholic. I did grow up in the Lutheran Church in the ELCA. It changed its name somewhere in my childhood, but Evangelical Lutheran. So not quite as conservative as some Lutheran synods are. And I was pretty faithful to that until I got into college, which I would think is probably a pretty common story for a lot of people. They get to be about 18 or 19 years old, and they start to question what they're doing. And, you know, I think I just got a little disillusioned. And then I spent probably the next 10 years away from practicing any kind of faith. I wouldn't say that I completely lost my faith. I think I was marginal at best. And then I had a pretty serious bout with depression and anxiety right before I turned 30. And right around in that time, I started to understand that maybe part of my problem was that I had really turned my back on God. Not because anything terrible had happened to me, but more because I couldn't see why I shouldn't just live the way the rest of the world was living, or what I thought the rest of the world was doing at that time. And as I started to kind of recover from that a little bit and things started to get better for me, I did kind of begin to think, I need to figure out where I belong. And I tried to go back to my church that I grew up in. And it just never really felt right. And I think if you've talked to any converts, you'll find that they might have said something like, I'm going to be anything but Catholic.
Yes.
And that was certainly what I thought. I'm going to be anything but Catholic. And funny, God had different plans for me. And in 2002 at Easter Vigil, I came into the church and was confirmed and received First Holy Communion. And I haven't really looked back. I continue to say that it was the single best decision I ever made. I can't imagine what the difficult parts of my life in the last almost 17 years would be like, if I hadn't had the Catholic faith to lean on.
Praise God for
bringing
you in. Yeah.
That's just truly it. It's just the single best decision I ever made.
I think there are a lot of Catholics who can say that. I think sometimes God waits until one of us is anything but Catholic, and then he kind of, yes, let me see about that and how that goes. But it's, that's wonderful. Then what happened? I assume you got married afterwards. How did that come about?
Yeah, so a lot of people assume that I converted because I was getting married, and I did not actually meet my ex-husband until after I had been Catholic for about a year. And we actually met through an online Catholic dating service and met and dated and decided rather quickly that we were going to get married. And, you know, I was 35 years old, so I thought that I was really smart and that I knew just exactly what I wanted. And I think what I really wanted was to be married, but I don't think I did such a great job of really thinking about what that meant, probably because nobody really ever talked about it. You know, you learn about marriage certainly by how it's modeled for you, which, you know, my parents have been married for 55 years. So I had good models, but I don't think anybody was really talking about it. So, you know, I was kind of left to kind of figure this out without feeling like I had anybody to talk to. All my friends were married, they were having kids. And I really thought that was what was going to make me happy. And I think, you know, in hindsight, you know, I could have done a better job of that. And I suspect that my ex-husband could have done a better job of that. I think we both probably didn't discern it very well.
I just want to go back to online dating very quick, because I met my husband through online dating, and he was 34, I was 29. And I found it in a way easier because we could talk about, we could flesh out everything before we even met face to face, before we even like Skyped, you know, video chatted. So I thought that was a perfect time. But I think in both of our cases, we knew what not to do because we were coming from divorced parents. And we were very vigilant. Like, I was just looking for something wrong constantly. Does it make sense? Like,
yeah.
I wanted to get married, but I also knew, like, I'd rather stay single than be married to the wrong person or be married for the wrong reasons, because I knew the results of divorce and I would never want to go through that myself or, you know, let my children go through. But I think in a way I was really I was okay being with single. Like, I don't want to say I was really happy with being single because, you know, I wanted to get married, but I always thought, okay, if the Lord doesn't bring me the right man, I was okay to spend my life single. Is that where you were, you think?
No, not at all.
Okay.
I really think that I thought that any of the unhappiness that I was feeling in my life, the loneliness, the feeling left out, was going to be solved by being married.
Mm-hmm.
And of course, I was exchanging one set of complications for a different set of complications. And I don't mean that to be disparaging. I just mean, if someone thinks that getting married is going to solve their problems, they probably need to take a step back and think about it a little bit harder.
Right. And you know what? I had a lot of, they were all Protestants. I didn't know any married Catholic couples then. Mm-hmm. But they like warned me many times, like, marriage is hard. You know, you just need to be happy who you are with Christ before you go into marriage. And I think I had really good counsel.
I think you too. And I kind of wish someone around me had said those things. I think looking back, you know, it's always easy to look back now and see the times where people were kind of trying to give me a signal, but there wasn't anybody. I think everybody thought that maybe I was maybe not on the right path, but they weren't saying it specifically because I think they were afraid that they were just going to upset me and that I probably wasn't going to listen anyway. And it's probably true that I wasn't, mm-hmm. but I wish that, you know, I've been fortunate that, and God does this all the time. So I'm not special. He takes whatever bad thing is happening in our life or the most horrible circumstances in our life and makes something good out of it. And mm-hmm. despite the fact that divorce is this terrible, painful, evil kind of thing, he took that, all that pain and all of that ugliness and led me to people who could help me find a way to heal from it.
Mm-hmm.
And you know, someone finally, after a couple of years, took me by the hand and was willing to help me have this encounter with Jesus to the point where I could understand better who I am and who God thinks I am, because I just thought I had to figure this out by myself. And I think that's probably why I kind of made a rash decision, but I think I made the decision that I thought was going to make me happy. And it probably wasn't as well thought out as
right.
it had been. Does that make sense?
Yes. And how about him? Like, do you think he was at the same place? Because just because you were there doesn't mean, you know, the Lord couldn't have solved this within the marriage. But if you both came into the marriage with false expectations, that's a lot harder to sustain.
And I think his circumstance was further complicated by the fact that he had been married before and had a decree of nullity before we got married. But I don't think that marriage was, it's my speculation that a lot of the things that happened in that marriage were the same things that happened in my marriage.
Mm-hmm.
And I think, you know, we both came with our own separate sets of baggage and they just didn't work well together. And I can tell you that I spent the entirety of the 6 years that we were married knowing something wasn't right and asking him to participate in fixing it. And he really didn't think there was anything wrong. And so I felt like I spent the whole time I was married trying to fix my marriage. And I think by the time that we split, I was hoping that it would be enough that it would shock him, that he would be willing to participate in something like that. And I don't want to say that he wasn't, but I don't think it was as high of a priority for him as I had hoped that it would have been. He said a lot of things, but I didn't see a lot of action in that regard. I didn't see it. That doesn't mean he wasn't doing it, but I wasn't seeing it. And I'm hesitant to say a ton about him because I spent the whole time that we were married being very distraught because I had fertility issues. We weren't able to have children. Mm-hmm. And by the time the marriage ended, I remember sitting one night and thinking, you know, I cried to you. I prayed about this for all these years and I didn't get the answer that I wanted, but the answer was really the right answer because we didn't have children. I think I've probably been able to heal quicker than some people might. Just because we don't have to have contact with one another. And so it's hard for me to speculate on where he is in terms of his faith and in terms of what's going on with him. I mean, I hope and pray that things are well with him, but I probably won't ever know.
Right. And you know, sometimes that's for the best. And how did you come to the decision did you go through the civil divorce first, then the decree of nullity?
Okay. We did. It took not quite a year for the divorce to be fine. Probably, let's see, August. It started in August, and by February, we went to court, and a month later, 30 days later, it was final. And that would have been in 2011. And it took me until, I know this varies from diocese to diocese. My diocese has a 1-year waiting period from the date of the divorce decree before you can petition the tribunal to examine your marriage. And I remember I was getting fairly close to the 1-year mark, and I went to see my pastor, and I told him that I wanted to pursue this. And I remember him being a little surprised. He said, normally when people come to see me, it's because they've already found someone else then they want to get married, and now they're wanting to get this decree of nullity and they want a decree of nullity. And he said he was kind of in a way commending me for kind of trying to be proactive. And I think it was actually less about trying to be proactive than it was I wanted to know how I had to live so that I would avoid any situation where I might accidentally find myself kind of attached to someone else, because first off, it's not good for me and it's not good for that other person. So I wanted to know if I had to live as though I was a married woman for the rest of my life. I wanted to know that. I was prepared to accept that answer. I don't know that I'd have been over the moon happy about it, but it was kind of this odd, like part of me wanted them to find in my favor. And part of me was like, if they just tell me that I have to live as a married woman, it felt like the safe answer.
Right.
Does that make, do you see what I'm saying? It was like, I was a scary, like, I don't know if I want this or not thing. Mm. And part of it was, you know, the whole background of being divorced was, you feel like you've failed and you feel like you're now kind of tainted goods and you feel like everybody knows. You feel like when you go to Mass and you hear a homily and something is mentioned about divorce, you immediately become defensive. Like your shields go up and you're already mad and you haven't even really heard what they're saying. And I think I hear those homilies now and I hear them differently than I did. And I fully believe that is because God has healed that, you know, I know because of the class that I helped facilitate, I know that that's a shared experience that other people that are divorced have, and it doesn't really matter what their background circumstances are. They still feel that like the spotlight is on them when that comes up in a homily. And it's a hard thing to feel that. I think that part of the problem is with that, the reason that happens is the church is trying to make sure that we understand that they don't want to advocate divorce. Mm-hmm. But at the same time, there's like this need for our priests to make sure that those of us who are divorced and who are living faithfully, whether or not we have a decree of nullity, if we're still living the faith as we should, that we feel welcomed.
I feel like those homilies are directed to people, mostly to people who are still single, to make good decisions in a way.
Yeah.
You know, as a married person, like I never feel like, oh, I hope this divorced lady behind me or divorced guy behind me is like hearing this and feeling sinful.
No, right.
Yeah, I always, but you know, again, it's a matter of perception. That's
right.
Because I don't hear it as the object of scorn, you know.
Yeah. And I suspect that what happens is I've heard it before and I'm fortunate I didn't have this experience, but I've heard it many times that people feel like they get divorced and automatically everyone stops talking to them. Like they run away, like they're afraid. And I think people don't know what to say, so they don't say anything.
It is awkward because.
Yeah. It's like my friend, it's like a friend of mine said the other night, it's like you go to a funeral and you say the wrong thing. And then you feel bad and you feel like you've made this person feel worse that's lost a loved one. And he said, it feels the same way, you know, to talk to some, if, you know, that's how people are afraid that's what they're going to do. And I will tell you, a week after my husband and I were no longer living together, and I showed up at church, and my husband had been coming with me to sing in this choir, and they're like, well, where's your husband? Did we scare him away? And I'm sure I had the total deer in headlights look on my face. I'm sure I went beet red, and I probably was doing everything I could not to cry. And then I told them what had happened, and I was just sure that everyone was now going to like distance themselves from me. And the woman that had asked me that question immediately just hugged me and said, I am so sorry this has happened.
Right.
And that is all I needed, because I don't know what would have happened if I hadn't gotten that reaction. I've talked to her since, you know, it took me a couple of years. Even now talking about it, it gets me a little bit weepy. I know that God put her there in that moment and made her the one to ask me that question because of the way she handled it. It's what I needed. It made me still feel like you belong here and we love you. And, you know, it was such a simple thing, but it made all the difference in the world. And I think, you know, if more people could just say something like that, because most of us don't need you to tell us you're better off without them.
Right.
Or gosh, I bet you'll be happier now. That's not what we need in that moment. We just need somebody to say, I'm glad you're here. I'm glad you're here. And I'm sorry this has happened to you. And I think, you know, it's a hard thing to do because, especially if it's fresh, people are probably going to cry. Mm-hmm. And if you don't handle that well, you know, that's a hard thing. It's a hard thing. But right. it sure makes a big difference. You know, you feel like that person over there has my back. Not because mm-hmm. something bad's going to happen to me, but they know that I'm struggling right now. And my guess is they're praying for me.
Right. It's like, it's the perfect example of loving the sinner. Like, mm-hmm. you know, they're not praising that you're divorced. Of course, no. this is not a good thing. This has happened to you. I mean, divorce is a sickness, you know, it's like a social sickness and it affects many people. And in your case, as you said, because you didn't have any children, it mm-hmm. didn't affect your children, which would have made their life harder, your life harder. You know, it just this effect ripples out. So divorce is not good.
No.
But that doesn't mean, you know, just like, look, you know, you've gone through this and we love you. You know, that's just that's the Catholic thing to do. But I've been a few times on the other side. And I have a friend who, she's not Catholic, and she thought, because I am Catholic, that I wouldn't want to talk to her when she went through her divorce. And she was completely justified. Actually, she didn't want the divorce. It was one of those one-sided ones, and it was her husband. And she thought I was like, I wouldn't even talk to her, or I wouldn't even listen to her. And that broke my heart, that this is what, in a way, the church shows outside, you know, like this is not right. This is not what the church teaches. Like, yes, things go wrong. This is life. We all sin, we do wrong things. But when you come back and you repent, the door is always, always open. You know, right. This is the kind of mercy we want to talk about. Right.
And it's kind of like anything else. There's going to be a consequence for what has happened, of course, you know, and they're not necessarily pleasant consequences, but we can always be forgiven, provided we're willing to leave behind our sin. I think that's the hard part. And it's difficult, you know, people who get divorced and they just want to have that other they want a person in their life. They want a spouse. And I understand that. But I think a lot of times it's too easy to immediately try and jump back into another relationship because you think that's going to make you feel better. And in the end, that it just makes a bigger mess and causes more pain. And that's really where the problem lies with divorce in the church. It's when we don't handle these situations the way the church prescribes, and it's how we end up with people getting married outside of the church, because the way the culture teaches about divorce and the way the church teaches about divorce are different. You know, the culture says, well, this civil tie has been ended with a divorce, so you're free. Well, yes and no. If you're Catholic, that means that the civil part of your marriage has been ended, but in the eyes of the church, until you've petitioned to have that marriage examined, you're still married. Mm-hmm. And that's the hard part for people to, you know, it's a complicated thing. And people who don't know about divorce don't necessarily spend time studying those kinds of things. And, you know, that's why I'm so grateful to know a couple of priests in our tribunal who are able to help kind of explain it and do a good job and answer questions when we run this class. And it, you know, that way the questions as they come up, I tell them, keep your list. And when Father comes, and he can answer them. Of course, he can't answer specifically about your specific case, but he can give you some general guidelines, some general ideas. And
when you say about the way the church and sees divorce and the way society sees it, you know, it just made me think that the society has a very low threshold for getting married, right? Mm-hmm. If you want to get married, go get married. We don't care. You know, it's like a legal contract here, sign here and you're done. Yep. But for the church, It's so much higher, right? Yeah. Like, that's one of the reasons it's so much harder, like, to get an annulment, because the church wants to make sure that these conditions were not met when you got married. So the church doesn't break a marriage because, you know, what God united, let no man put apart. But it's like, for to be married in the church, in the eyes of the church, what is needed? Like, maybe, like, some people, I feel like they're just starting wrong. They don't understand what marriage is for the Catholic Church.
I think it's that, but I think it's even just having the wrong idea about what marriage should look like. And part of it is we all get a Hallmark movie version of what love and romance are like, and we think that life is going to be like that. I mean, I'm not saying we think logically that it's going to be like that, but I think that that's all what we kind of hope for, of course. Mm-hmm. And unless someone's really had the heart, I remember even my own engaged encounter, it was a lot of marriage is great, and there wasn't a lot of kind of real talk about, you know what, there's going to be nights where this is going to happen, and you're not, you know, I'd not that it want to say that nobody was trying to scare us, but I kind of wish somebody would have, you know, that it wouldn't have all just been like, isn't marriage great? Marriage is great. I've said it before, you know, only because I have this many years. If you have any doubts before you get married, if you have problems before you get married, do not think that getting married is going to solve them, because it's probably going to make them worse. And so you have to be willing to be really honest. And I think that's part of it too, is even still at that point, I know it was true for me, and I suspect it was true for my ex-husband, that we were both still trying to put our best face on things. It doesn't always go like that.
One of the things that somebody told me, that the engagement is the best part. That's the best you will see him, the best you will see her. Yeah. It's just going to go down from that. You know, I mean...
That's not untrue. And that's what I think, because we got married relatively quickly. We didn't get to spend enough time to see all of the warts. We saw some of them. I don't want to make it sound like my ex-husband was a horrific man. He has very good qualities sometimes. Other times things were, I felt very much like I was not, how do they say, you know, husbands love your wives as Christ loves the church. Mm-hmm. And I think we forget all of the verses that go either side of it, because the most important part is as Christ loves the church,
right? And,
which means willing to lay your life down, mm-hmm. Which probably means putting your wife's needs before your needs all the time. And conversely, the wife should be doing the same thing. And it can be really hard when you're not in sync on that. And I think some of that, our being out of sync on that, was the baggage and the wounds that we carried into the marriage that we hadn't dealt with yet.
Right.
Which is part of the reason why, I'm sure, part of the reason why they found that my marriage was null. Was because a lot of these, I know I focused entirely on myself in that process, because it didn't really matter what happened in the marriage. It might have been a indicator of what was going on before we were married for both of us. But I know that I certainly had things that prevented me from knowing that I could be a good wife and that I had value. Since that time, I have come to understand my identity you know, that I am a beloved daughter of a father who loves me. But I didn't know that then. I felt like God loves Vicky because she is part of humanity and God loves everybody. And now I've had that encounter that lets me know that God loves me because I'm me and I'm the only one there is. And he loves each of us that way, but not because we're part of the collective, but because of who I am. And I didn't have that understanding when I went into my marriage. And I think that understanding for me and that understanding for my spouse would have made a really big difference. And that perhaps both of us could have been committed to trying to solve the problems that not knowing that had caused.
Right.
But so, it takes people to do that.
Right. So that's what I was going to ask. So what did you do? What changed that trajectory for you?
You mean after I was divorced?
Right.
Yeah. We didn't have a Catholic program here really at the time that I got divorced, and I, through a friend of mine, had found out about a program called Divorce Care, which is a totally Protestant course. But the funny thing was, I went there and I found two other lovely Catholic women, and we all bonded pretty well. I mean, we all were pretty committed to our faith, and you know, we really helped each other out. And then of course, I was in counseling and therapy for a long time just to kind of keep dealing with things. And then about 4 years ago, a little over 4 years ago, the Family Life Office, the director of our Family Life Office, put out an announcement in the bulletins throughout, at least through the city, but it probably went out to the whole diocese, that they were going to be offering this course that I help facilitate now. And I kept seeing it in the bulletin and I kept thinking, already I had been divorced for several years and I had been through the annulment process and had received a decree of nullity. And I kept thinking, and perhaps pridefully, that maybe I'm supposed to go to this because I can help somebody else. And of course, you know, I think I signed up on the last day that you could sign up because I was kind of torn internally about why I needed to go there. And it quickly became apparent to me that I needed to be there for my own sake because I was still kind of angry and I had a lot of resentments that just really hadn't been resolved. And through that process, I met the priest that was running it, started to work with me a little bit on spiritual direction, and had me start doing some mental prayer every day, kind of some Lexio Divina kind of prayer every day. And he said, and I think you need to go to daily mass. And I looked at him and I went, okay. I hadn't been a daily mass attendee, not on any kind of regular basis up to that point, but the fact that he was willing to work with me on my prayer life and going to daily mass, he really was the one who said, who helped me have that encounter, because through that prayer, it got me most part of the way, at least. Like I kind of have said it before, that going to that class kind of left the door ajar. And then I was able to, through spiritual direction. And then there's a prayer apostolate kind of here in our diocese. And I know it's in other dioceses too. It's called Unbound. It's based on a book by Neil Lozano.
Right.
And that helped me because it helped me go back and forgive a lot of things, not just in my marriage, but in my life prior, forgive people that had hurt me, whether they knew it or not. I could still sit there and say that I forgive them. It also helped me. And I think the prayer that Father started me on and just that kind of walking with me a little bit helped me when I went to my Unbound prayer to start to unlearn some of the lies the enemy had told me about me. Mm-hmm. You know, that maybe I wasn't unworthy or I wasn't good enough and all of those kinds of lies. And then from there, I ended up with another spiritual director, because this priest was, he's just very busy. He travels a lot and speaks a lot all around the country. So I ended up with another spiritual director and did what's called a 19th annotation, which is the spiritual exercises of St. Ignatius of Loyola in kind of in your daily life. So it takes about 9 months, give or take, to go through that process, meeting with a spiritual director every week. And I would say, you know, that process of all of that prayer time really, it changed me in a really concrete kind of way. In fact, my spiritual director at the time said to me, you know, when I first met you, you could hardly look me in the eye. And he said, now you sit before me and you're confident. He's right. I mean, I see the difference in me.
So it sounds like there were a lot of different layers in a way you had to go through. It's not a like, okay, you go to this class and, you know, how many days the one you run? I'm so sorry. What is it called?
Yeah, it's called Surviving Divorce. It's a 12 week, it's videos, and then there's time for discussion and there's the little workbook that goes with it. It's 12 weeks long. And I think the 12 weeks of that is good because it's kind of like, talk about all the things that kind of go along with divorce, like, okay, getting your bearings. What do I do now? You know, talk about finances a little bit, talk about anger and how to deal with your family and forgiveness and all of those kinds of things, which I think are really important. And it's not going to be the thing that fixes everything. But it's a good kind of get you back on the right path kind of thing so that you can maybe find a spiritual director and or get involved with some other prayer groups or Bible studies or things that can really help you get closer to God. And it's not going to fix everything. Nothing will, except for God. Right. You know, having a regular prayer life, like time dedicated to that every day, makes a huge difference. Spiritual direction is great. I know it's not always something that's readily available to everyone, mm-hmm. but if you can find it, you should do it. And if you can't, then find somebody who is a good friend that's got a really deep prayer life that you can maybe talk about some of these things with. Mm-hmm. I would say regularity and confession is a big deal too, because as you're kind of healing, some of these wounds are going to come up and you're going to be mad and you're going to be tempted to just give up. And, you know, staying close to the sacraments can really help, especially the Eucharist. So if you can get to daily Mass, by all means do it, because it can really help strengthen you to get through this hard stuff and close, you know, and be close to our Lord.
So you're in the Diocese of Lincoln, yes?
Yes.
And this is Surviving Divorce is part of the diocesan effort, I assume. Yes.
I work through our family life office. We offer it through our family life office. I know we have a couple of other places throughout the diocese farther west that are running the same series at different times. And I know we'd really like to see it roll out kind of on a broader scale if we can, so that everybody that is kind of living through this can have access to something like this and they don't have to drive, you know, 50 miles. Mm-hmm. Because a lot of our diocese is more rural.
Right. Because even if it doesn't solve everything, and as you say, it's not going to, it's 12 weeks and it's like a starter, mm-hmm. To get the ball rolling towards a complete healing. Mm-hmm. But at least we can do it within the church.
Well, and you can also, I know it's happened to me and I'm sure it's happened to other people, that you make friends and at least you know you have this other person who is living faithfully, whether, you know, they want to be a faithful Catholic, and you know that there's somebody else who understands your struggles and you can go have coffee with them or go have lunch with them. And kind of grow in a kind of community kind of way. So you, at least you know you have these other people that might understand at least part of your struggle.
And it's like, that's how you stay in the church. You don't just kind of drift off. And that's right. How I feel with a lot of divorced people. Like, they don't feel like they can come back anymore.
Right.
Because there is nothing, and people feel very awkward about talking to them. And so if there are more programs like this, at least they find some kind of friendship, that they're not alone, and the Lord is willing to forgive and heal these wounds. And that's really good. And so the other layer, I want to talk about the prayer aspect. Mm-hmm. And then it's interesting that you brought Unbound, because that's another aspect we never talk about. It's because Satan loves divorce, right? Oh, like, okay, Yes. This is what I can use forever. Like, and he does. For some people, he uses, and he just clings on and reminds everything. We hold these grudges, like, until we die. You know, we literally take them to grave with us. And he just loves it. He doesn't care, like, who's right or who's wrong, as long as he can use these and just keep you away from the sacraments, keep you away from the church. So that's spiritual part, because even though sometimes divorce isn't even our fault, there's a spiritual door that's opened,
right?
You know, that he can come in and he can nag us. And we kind of often overlook that. So I'm glad you brought it up.
Well, it's been, like I said, it's like another step on that path that's helped me. And I know a lot of people a lot of my friends have gone through it too, independently of me, and have had the same experience, that it's very freeing to be able to shed some of those lies that the enemy likes to continue to use to make us feel like maybe there isn't any hope. I just know that there's a lot of healing that can come out of forgiving people that have hurt you. Even if they don't even know that you've forgiven them, doesn't matter, because you can let go of some of those hurts that go with it. And then those lies, things that the enemy likes to use to tell us that we're not good enough, or that we're not smart enough, or, you know, you can't be forgiven for this. Or my favorite is, I can't forgive myself. And I'm like, well, but God can forgive you. Why can't you forgive you? I can't stress enough how helpful things like that can be. And it's not something that you can, you know, sometimes you have to take it one step at a time. Maybe now you need to be here for 12 weeks. And then in 3 months after that, then your next thing is to go do something like Unbound, or start working with a spiritual director, or both, because it can really help you see more clearly who you are and what God sees when he looks at you.
But it takes time at the end of the day. You know, it's not like, okay, I have my declaration of nullity, I have my civil court divorce, I'm all good now, I'm free. But you're not.
You're not.
You have bound yourself with another person.
Right.
You know, regardless of whether that was a marriage or not. And there are, as you say, there are consequences for it. And that it takes a long time to break you apart from that. Yeah. This is wonderful. And I will put a link to this on my website, to this program, because it sounds wonderful. And I didn't even know that it existed in the Catholic Church. So tell me, what would have helped you to feel more welcome when you had this divorce? And I thank God for that one lady at the choir, but some of the people, they don't get that. So how can we, like, help people who are going through divorce and this, like, really heartbreaking process?
Well, I think an easy place to start is just kind of follow her example in a way. You don't have to maybe be that direct, because maybe they don't really want to talk about it, but at least be willing to include them, because they're maybe not going to be the one that shows up. So maybe invite them. You know, if you're part of a mom's group and you know this is happening and you think it might be hard, maybe you can go together. So she doesn't have to feel like, I have to show up and everybody, she already has somebody who is welcoming her. Same thing, you know, Knights of Columbus or whatever. I realize those are all men. Usually, you know, that's a men's group, but they might not be willing to show up knowing, you know, reach out and invite them to come. And I think, you know, women are maybe better at this than men are. Men have a very hard time, I think, asking for help or just asking for support. Because I know the ratio of women to men in these classes is better than 2-1. Mm. I think this particular session, we have 12 people and 4 of them are men, which is a large number. Usually we are lucky if we have one man that comes. So it's particularly important for men because they just want, they kind of want to be tough, and that's okay, but it's harder to recover if you aren't at least a little bit vulnerable.
Right. And you bring it to the next relationship and next relationship, you know, you're like a repeat offender, basically.
Yeah, exactly. And I think, so I think, you know, the biggest thing really is just to feel, help people feel like they're welcome. And that, and we should really be doing that with anybody, whether they're divorced or not, if it's a visitor at your parish or, you know,
right.
Be friendly at least. But, and I think if it's happening to someone that's a friend, certainly you want to encourage them to reconcile it if they can, and be willing to help them in whatever way you can to do that. If it means, you know, you take their kids for a couple of hours so they can go, you know, talk with a counselor or something, I'm all for it. Mm-hmm. You know, if we can reconcile them, we should. If they're reconcilable, they should be reconciled if there's any possible way.
We had a kind of an incident, but they were in a Catholic family, and one part was really open to reconciliation and the other party wasn't. And it was really hard to watch this unfold. And sometimes we do feel helpless, but I think it's good that, like, we, even though they weren't Catholics, we tried to come up from a perspective that they could potentially, you know, appreciate. It didn't work out. But one of the things you said earlier, sometimes we need to be a little direct, you know, sometimes we may just lose those friends for the sake of their own marriage. But sometimes we need to tell the truth, like, as gently as possible. But it's like, it makes me think about if, like, if somebody had actually, maybe two of your close friends had told you that maybe you're not going into this marriage situation with the right mindset, maybe you would have stopped and thought about it.
And I think too, it would have depended on how they approached it. It wouldn't have been, I don't see why you're marrying this guy because of X, Y, and Z. But if it had been, have you really, really spent the time to think through this? Because this is not something you can undo easily.
Right.
In fact, you really can't undo it. You know, so as I've been kind of thinking about this, knowing that we were going to have this talk, I, you know, it's more than just marriage preparation. It's more than just pre-Cana. It's more than that. It's really parents like you talking to their children and being really open about what marriage really is. And, you know, in an age appropriate kind of way, of course, you know, but when they're teenagers and they're starting to date, you know, I feel like, and this is not because my parents are bad people. It's just, we just didn't talk about this kind of stuff. And I think our expectations for what marriage is going to look like have been very glamorized by, and it's not always glamorous. Sometimes it's just downright hard work and it's messy. Mm-hmm. But both parties have to recognize that, and both parties have to be willing to put everything they have into it.
Right. And it's like, even in my marriage, which has been nothing but wonderful because of my husband, not because of me, like, it gets tedious. Like, even the best marriages, like,
right,
it's the same thing over and over, same people, same diaper changes, same toy pickup. And this puts strain on any relationship. And you realize, have I talked to my husband last week at all in any meaningful way? It's so easy to get into that routine. And like, a few times I remember thinking, like, this is the happily ever after the movies never show you, right?
Yes.
It's always perfect. And, you know, they lived happily ever after. And I'm like, look, this is a great marriage. We have a great family, children. You couldn't ask for more. And consider how much harder it would be if we had marital issues.
Oh, yes.
And maybe we should be more honest about it. You're right. You know, as parents, as priests, maybe have more married couples come and talk about the struggles in their marriage. But just as in general, be more open. And then it's worth fighting for. Like, that's one of the things. Like, look, it's hard, but it's good. It's like raising children. We don't do it because it's fun all the time. You know, have you cleaned up puke for nights in a row? No, it's not fun, but it's good. That's right. Why we do it.
And I think, you know, there's a difference between what you're talking about where it gets tedious and somebody's just bored. Mm-hmm. And the difference between that and a situation where there's abuse, whether it's physical or just strictly a mental, verbal kind of abuse and a constant tearing down of your partner. I'm sure that you work equally as hard as I did as being a wife in terms of trying to keep the house up and you've got kids and I didn't have that. And it's hard to not feel like that hard work that you're doing is appreciated, even if it's one thing to not hear that it's appreciated. It's another thing to have it be a tearing down, constant tearing down. And it's important how we talk to each other.
Yes. And abuse is not only physical. And in a way, a lot of men and women do it too. You know, we just know how to use words to hurt others.
Yes.
Like we can, it just creates this, it could create this awful relationship where the other person is there just because you made them believe that they're completely worthless outside of this marriage. And I had a very good friend who actually walked away from the Catholic Church because her mom would not leave her like physically and emotionally abusive husband because she said, no, we just don't do that in the Catholic Church. We just like put up with it forever.
Yeah.
And they can do whatever they want. I'm like, no. This is not true. This is not what the church teaches, you know, especially if there is abuse in there. Like, actually, if there's abuse in there, you're supposed to leave.
Yeah. If you're in danger in physical abuse, emotional abuse puts you in danger.
Mm-hmm.
And you're perfectly fine to leave, to be safe.
Right. That's one of the things that, you know, the church never taught that you're supposed to stay with a husband that beats you. Like, no. Or as, you know, as we talked about constantly, like I met another woman a few months ago and her husband would not let her leave the house, not by like force, but he had made her believe that she would be completely incapable of taking care of herself outside the house, even for the grocery store. Like this woman was completely paralyzed. I mean, the door is there. She could up and leave, but she couldn't until finally one day it was too much and she did. But like this, there is power in words and like we have power over people's emotions and reactions. I mean, that's important. Like, yes, we are, of course, against divorce, but.
Right. Well, and it's one thing I prayed through my whole marriage that either God would change me or God would change him so that our marriage would be good. And, you know, for whatever reason, either one of us was resisting that change or that wasn't really what God wanted. I don't know. And I won't know this side, you know, I won't know, but God, again, God used this horrible, awful thing in my life to bring something good. It's what he does. He uses whatever is at his disposal to do, to make something good. And so bad things are going to happen to us. And yeah, we have to endure them. We do. But God doesn't want us. That's part of our fallen nature. It's part of original sin that made it so that we are fallible, sinful people. You know, it's part of, it's that concupiscence that we gained at the fall that we didn't have originally, you know, and that doesn't mean that the whole world is bad. The world is good and we are good, but we're not perfect. And God's always going to take whatever is at his disposal and use it for his good, for our good. It's just not always the answer to the prayer that we asked for. And why, I don't know. We aren't always going to be privy to that.
Right. I mean, he answered, but not the answer you wanted. And, you know, as you say, you were willing to cooperate, but it's, you know, it takes two and three, actually. It takes three in a marriage. So another thing is, how can we help people when, as you say, you know what, maybe we talked about this a little bit, like how to help them when we see that their marriage is struggling, like where can we direct them other than, okay, you need to go see a counselor? Like, is there like any other like concrete way that we can help people go through this struggle and maybe, you know, come triumphant on the other side?
Well, I would suppose that couples that maybe have been through something like that might choose to maybe mentor a couple like that, you know, like kind of take them under their wing. And, you know, in my mind, I'm seeing a couple that's been married quite some time with this younger couple. But there's also things like RetroVi. Their mission is to help save marriages that are in trouble. Mm-hmm. And I think I really think kind of befriending people like that would probably be really a good thing. Like couple activities, I would imagine, would be helpful in that way. Although, you know, that wasn't successful for me. I tried that. I tried to get us to do that. Mm-hmm. Trying to reach out to those people and make them feel like, understand that it's going to be hard, but that they can, that if they work together, they can probably overcome it.
That's all. Is there anything you'd like to add? I mean, it's a place that it's very hard for me to see, but I really want to learn how to be better at talking to people who are going through this. And I've, in the few years that I've lived in America, I've encountered so many people, and you just want to change the topic. You don't want to talk about it. It's just this weird, awkward silence. And because either you don't know what to say or you don't know how to help them. So it's just like easier to not to talk about it, but it can't be easy for them because that's their whole life. It's like this.
Yeah. You know. Well, it kind of starts. It's funny. It's come up several times because I talk to people like you and they find out that, number one, that I'm divorced. And number two, that I'm kind of doing this work of trying to help people kind of recover and find that life doesn't have to be horrible and miserable forever because of a divorce. They always say to me, wow, that has got to be really hard. And it's probably because I've had the experience that I don't find this to be difficult. And in a conversation a couple of weeks ago, well, it's probably been more like a month ago, I was having that talk with somebody and they said those words that, wow, that's really hard work. And I said, you know, I just don't feel that. And his comment was, then you're in the right place. You know, some of it is just probably talking to some people like someone like me, not necessarily me, but someone like me who's been through this and has kind of come through it and feels comfortable with it, that finding someone who's willing to talk about their own experience might make it easier for you to then talk to somebody else about it. Does that make sense?
Yes. Yes.
Because I have found that the more I'm willing to talk about it, the more people seek me out to say, how do you think I ought to handle this? What do you think I should say? Not because I have great advice, but they know that I've lived through this and that I've talked to a lot of people about it. And So perhaps it's just maybe talking to some people that maybe it's not like a really fresh divorce, but it's they're several years down the road and you know that they're faithful. What do you think I should say? How do you think I should handle this? Because I want to help them feel welcome in the church. I want to help them feel like they are they are my brother or my sister in the body of Christ, you know?
That's a wonderful advice. And I'm so glad there's a service like yours. And I'm so glad that you're willing to talk about it. And I'm sure it wasn't comfortable at first. So I really appreciate it, even you coming and sharing it on the podcast. And I hope it reaches more people so we can deal with this. And I don't want divorced people to drift away from the church. I want them to heal within the church, because this is the only true place to heal. So thank you very much for coming on, Vicky. And this was a wonderful, a little hard, but wonderful conversation. So thank you.
Yeah, thank you.
Thank you very much again for your honesty and wisdom, Vicky. May the Lord bless you and your work. Hopefully we will all remember your words when we have to talk to people who are struggling in their marriage. Let's say Hail Mary for the healing of struggling marriages and for the healing of people who have already gone through this process. Hail Mary, full of grace, the Lord is with thee. Blessed art thou among women, and blessed is the fruit of thy womb, Jesus. Holy Mary, Mother of God, pray for us sinners, now and at the hour of our death. Amen. Thank you very much for listening to Live a Little. Please consider supporting me on Patreon. And please leave a comment on social media. I love hearing from you. I love hearing your input. And sorry for such a sad topic, but such are the times we live in. Let's live a little and bring the lost to life together.
BreadBox Media Programming is brought to you by Jack Kane Ford. Find your next Ford Tough vehicle at caneford.com.
CMF Curo is the country's first Catholic healthcare ministry to provide an affordable health sharing solution rooted in Catholic teaching and community. Learn more at mycatholichealthcare.com/podcast. That's mycatholichealthcare.com/podcast.